Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It is Carl, and with me today, I have got Natalie Wernert. How's it going, Natalie?
It's going good. Hi, Carl.
I know that you're going to be at the Digital PM Summit in San Antonio this October, and I'm excited to see you get up on stage. And when I was thinking about this conversation today, one of the things that really struck me was you were a developer, and now you've taken this turn to being an agile coach. So share that story with everybody. How do you go from being a developer to being a coach?
Yeah. So it's an interesting story, really. If you would have asked me, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, what I would be doing right now, it definitely wouldn't have been this. I don't even think I knew this particular job existed then. So, you know, even going into college, into undergrad, I had never even thought about being a developer. I kind of went in with the mantra, oh, I want to be in business and I want to work at one of those, you know, big towers that I've seen in Minneapolis or the other big cities. I want to work in the Skyline building. And, that was as far as I really got. And I somehow meandered my way into information systems and, you know, came out with a business degree majoring in, you know, information systems, which is a little bit different than computer science, management information systems, people are calling it now. And, you know, landed my first job as, you know, an HTML and CSS developer. And so I was working on website development, doing some JavaScript, doing some jQuery, and then all the other styling, and really didn't know how I got there. But I did that for, about a year and a half. And the funny thing is, looking back in retrospect now, we didn't call it Agile at the time. And I know a lot of people say that. We weren't calling it Scrum, but I can now see outlines of some of the ceremonies that we were doing. We were having a daily scrum. We were having, we were having meetings with our product owner. We were kind of doing actually a little bit more of a pull system, similar to Kanban. But, you know, I was spending my days taking tickets and, you know, fulfilling those tickets, writing the code, doing actually kind of a continuous deployment type thing and getting things out on the website and updated very quickly. And, you know, the particular company that I was working at was Travelers Insurance, and I was in a program called the IT Leadership Development Program. And so part of that program was to move around to different areas of the company, try different roles, and really learn the entire business and learn all of IT. So after that developer role, I went more into project management. And that was where I really got more exposed to Agile and realized, hey, we were actually being fairly agile on, you know, this web development team. And I really kind of like this. I also realized I'm not an amazing developer. I like the solving problems. But you know, it didn't really strike me as a thing that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I really was into more of the process and the human aspects. So, you know, that kind of made me transition more into that project manager role, which then transitioned more into Scrum Master. And then after Scrum Mastering for quite some time, really got more onto the coaching side and working with a number of Scrum Masters and really looking at the overall process across multiple teams instead of, you know, just the one particular team that that I was being a project manager or Scrum Master on. So the transition sounds probably fairly simple and quick, but it was anything but. There were definitely a lot of hurdles and a lot of things to learn. And I'm still learning new things every single day. But yeah, that was where I started and kind of here's where I am now. And I'm really not sure where it's going to lead me in the future because I never would have imagined myself right here.
Well, and there you go. So you start off as a developer. You learned what it was to be a developer. You understand the mm-hmm. language. You understand the time it takes, which makes you a perfect candidate to then go on and help people who are doing that and then help the people who are helping the people, right? So it sounds like that was kind of the progression.
Yeah, and it's been a really helpful skill set to have. You know, even just those couple years that I was a developer, I can relate to a lot of the things they're going through. I understand how stressful releases can be from the development side. I understand how hard it is to test and the frustrations that come with, you know, infrastructure being down or infrastructure that's not working the right way you want it to. And so that really helps me to be an effective coach because, you know, I can speak that language. I can empathize because I was really there.
And, you know, it's interesting what you're saying about doing the agile stuff before it was agile with a capital A, which everybody loves to say agile with a capital A. So a good friend of mine, Jack Skeels, he was doing agile back in the late 80s. And he was saying that wasn't, you know, I don't know that that was the terminology. They had some of it, but then it starts to form. It starts to, you know, become a thing. And now you have all of these weird offshoots with fragile and water fail and all this kind of stuff. And I really think a lot of it's based on the context of what you're trying to accomplish. So are there times when you're there and you're meeting with people and you realize you have to go off course from what agile would say?
You know, definitely. I think that We have a few different camps, right? We of course have the camps that are divided by method, I don't know the word I want to use. We'll probably have to cut this out, but we have the different camps that are divided by, oh, well, we do Scrum and we're into Kanban and we're into, lean methods and, you know, we're doing XP, we're doing this. So there's those. But a thing that a lot of people forget about is we're really trying to base it on a set of principles here and how are we developing better, not necessarily what practices we're using.
Right.
It's, you know, what things are we doing to support the principles? And those practices can be anything. The other thing I like to say is that, you know, it doesn't mean that we should be knocking the other ones, whether that be Waterfall or someone who's doing Scrum, but... or someone that's, you know, doing like a lean-ish thing. But, you know, everything had a place at one point. And yes, we found ways of working that are better. But the thing that I realized, especially in running agile transformations, is that we can't possibly expect people to just flip the switch and do everything one way. And one way is not going to fit for everybody. And so I think the way that we're kind of moving is going to more of a pick and choose style where, you know, someone called it an agile buffet, which I really liked. And, you know, you know, maybe you pick your lettuce and you pick some chocolate pudding and those don't go well together and you figure that out. But maybe there's a couple other combinations that maybe they don't look like they go well together, but they actually do. And so it's really, how are we going to try these different things, all relating back to our, you know, our agile values. And, you know, that's the way that we're really going to get things done. And, you know, it goes back to just being able to communicate well and to inspect what we're doing and see, is it doing what we need it to be doing? And that those needs are going to change too. So it's gone from a very, you know, a very prescriptive type implementation to, I think it's gotten a lot more pragmatic. And then there are, of course, people that are on all spectrums of that.
Right. Now, I'll say that looking at your experience, you know, SPC, CSP, CSM, you've done Lean, you know, Six Sigma, Kanban. So you are the perfect person, I would say. And I'm sure there must be other people out there who have similar experience, but I haven't met them, in figuring out what are these different tools, these different approaches where we can keep the principles the same. So I'm just curious, have you done something? And I know in your talk, Show Me the MVP, you're going to talk about Lean UX and how that works in product development. Are there things when you look at your background that have helped you just kind of not pick and choose, but find some of the best from everything and put it together?
Yeah. You know, I've done a lot of different implementations with a lot of different teams. And one thing that I've really learned is the inspect and adapt. And I have by no means been perfect with doing that. I look back, you know, a few years ago when I was first getting into some of the Scrum stuff, and I was extremely prescriptive and no, you can't do that like this. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, I tried a lot of things with Lean UX on a team that was not agile at that point. And we kind of figured out what the middle ground was. And then I had people on the other side saying, well, that's not agile. And it went to the point where it was like, well, you know what? These things are actually working for us. And if you're going to tell me that I'm not agile because I have a few handoffs in here, well, then maybe we're not agile, but we're something. And
you're effective.
It's working.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're making it work for us, and we're working within the constraints that that our organization has put out there. So with Show Me the MVP, I did a similar talk to this one in Ukraine last year at Lviv IT Arena, and it was really interesting just kind of talking about, because I think people have a really different idea about what an MVP actually is. The term has gotten so corrupted, and so the big thing that I try to put across in the Show Me the MVP talk is, you know, an MVP needs to be enough functionality to learn something, right? We're not talking about a minimum marketable product, right? Maybe we're not going to sell this, but maybe we are. What are we trying to learn? And sometimes that's the absolute minimum functionality that we can put in to get some feedback. Sometimes it's a little more because we need some more to learn. We need to maybe meet a certain set of table stakes in order to be able to learn something. A lot of the examples that I've used in training classes have been just extremely simplified ones with sending emails or checking out with a shopping cart. Those examples are good to get context and, you know, to be able to understand. However, you know, you get the people in there that are saying, well, we could never market that. Right? We couldn't market sending an email if you don't have a subject line in it. And so that's true. So it goes to, all right, what do we mean MVP in this instance? And what are we actually trying to learn and validate so that we can do something? And so that's really what I talk about. And I give a couple examples of some digital places that I've worked where, you know, we've implemented some quote MVPs, and you know, sometimes they're not the best solutions. Sometimes they're super hacked together, but we just wanted to see if it would work, to see if it was worth investing in. Or, you know, by meeting these set of table stakes and adding this small piece onto it, what is that going to do? So it's really all about learning. And I think going back to where the MVP comes from, the lean startup, it's all about, yeah, testing hypotheses. And so regardless of what you're really defining MVP as, are you learning something from it? If so, then keep doing it and try to learn more. You know, I don't really care if you, you know, if you put a ton of effort into it or not to make it marketable. It's just, what are you trying to get out of it? Because maybe it does need to be a little more marketable to get something out of it. I don't know. It depends on your situation, which goes back to what I was saying before. You know, it's all contextual. And so you have to be able to, you know, be thoughtful enough to understand what context am I working in? And it's going to be different every time.
Well, and I think the issues that a lot of people face when they're working in Agile for the first time, or even as they get going, is that design component, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and you call it just-in-time design, you know, and for me, that feels right. And I know that I've seen Agile for Design, you know, it's like there are all these types of things. What do you find works best when you're trying to get to that MVP and the design component? Like, what do you do to help with that, or to give people a little bit of comfort? Because I know designers, they wig out a little.
Oh, most definitely. It's definitely difficult with designers to call things done because, well, you know, as with developers, right, we can always make something better. And so it's hard to put that stamp on it and say it's done. So I try and change the language and I say done for now, or I say just enough for now, those types of things. It's not, we can never go back and look at this again, but we need to get this to a point where we can stamp it and try it. And then you know what, we're going to learn and we're going to add to it. And I think that designers are getting a lot better at working that way. As our developers, I think that on the development side, it needs to be, especially when you get past your quote MVP phase, it needs to be worked on a little bit, because all too often I see solutions going in that were hacked together for more of a let's learn, let's do MVP. And then they don't get built in more of a scalable way. And then we run into problems down the line. So I think that needs to change a little bit. But back to the design piece, there's another thing I've been working in that, so you mentioned my SPC, and Scaled Agile talks about point-based design versus set-based design. And really what that means is we want to, instead of making a decision at a very early point in time, on the way our design wants to go, especially with this MVP type stuff, what we want to do is we want to preserve our options by keeping a set of designs, so a few different designs to try. And as we, you know, get closer to our, whatever it is, our release date or our tests, right? Think about kind of the cone of uncertainty. Right. As we move along that and we get more information, then we can whittle down into more of a single design. But if we make that decision on the design right at the initial piece and say, yep, this is what we're going to try, this is going to be our MVP, we're most likely going to find out that that's wrong and we're going to have to do a bunch of adjustment at the end. Versus if we look at it the other way and we come in with maybe five different designs and then, you know, we learn something and then we cut it down to three and then we learn something and cut it down to one, we've had to make adjustments, but those adjustments haven't been as drastic as they would have been had we said, okay, we're going to start with this one and then we end up at a completely different option. So that's a really helpful tool. And I talk about that in Show Me the MVP as well.
Well, and you know, I think language matters so much. Communication is always the biggest struggle for any team, regardless of how you're trying to work. And so just to be able to say for now, I think adding those two words is brilliant. Because it lets everybody relax.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest, you know, one of the biggest fears is I don't want this to go out before it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to put out subpar work. That's in our nature for the most part. And so, yeah, by telling someone, yeah, we're going to put this out, they're like, oh, it's not done yet. You know, you have to kind of get over that hump and say, this is good enough for now, you know, done for now. And we will definitely be able to go and revisit it because, of course, we're going to want to make changes.
Right.
So.
Now, you recently got your Master's of Arts in Organizational Leadership, so congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a little over a year.
I don't know where you found the time.
It was tough.
There you go. And I know that your thesis was on increasing women's involvement in the Agile and technology community. And you're working on women in Agile. So talk about that. Like, what have you found? What's going on? How can everybody help?
Yeah, great questions. So women in Agile, I mean, this is something that kind of came up, at least came to my attention probably 4 years ago at a conference. And we realized, you know what? Where are all the women? And I'm going to give credit to the entire Agile community here because in the 4 years since that conversation was had, I've seen a great improvement in the amount of women that are showing up at conferences and speaking. So we've definitely seen gains. But what I really wanted to understand was, you know, why is it like this? I think it's everyone knows that there are fewer women in technology, and a lot of the studies go back to, okay, well, why aren't we getting girls involved earlier? Why are they dropping out in college? And my question was a little bit different. I said, all right, well, those things are somewhat treating some of the symptoms, but for, you know, we have all these efforts going to get girls more involved in STEM. However, if we do not have women in leadership positions to support those people that are those girls that are in STEM now that are going to grow up and hopefully continue in the field, what's going to happen then? You know, we're just perpetuating the issue.
Right.
So where are the women that are in IT? Yes, we know that proportionally there are fewer, but you know, even looking at you know, percentages and proportions at conferences, it's not equal. Or it's not proportional to the amount.
Right.
So what are the reasons that the women that are already here, what are the reasons they're not being more involved? And so that was really what my thesis dug into. What are those reasons? And then, you know, on the other side of the question, okay, now that we know some of these reasons, what can we do to help combat those reasons and, you know, kind of pull those women up to be more involved? And so that was what all that work was on. And I've done I've done a few different events. I've written a number of articles in addition to my thesis, and actually have a workshop coming up actually this Sunday, right before Agile 2016. I know this podcast will be out later than that, but look for information from that, because we're hoping to do some videotaping and post some information from it. But really, we're looking to get both women and men together and say, hey, we know this is a problem. We're not putting any blame on anybody, but how do we show the benefits of involvement, and how do we help make it easier to get involved? And you know, after all, we're going to benefit as an entire community when there's more people involved.
It's so true. All the research shows that when you have more diverse teams, you've got better teams. And it's all about diversity and inclusion, making sure that everybody exactly. gets a chance to not only be heard, but to be accepted, right? And there's like,
yes. Ugh. That was a key piece that I was touching on with someone the other day, is some people think diversity is just, all right, well, our team looks different, but let's get them all to think the way that I want them to think. Well, that's not diversity,
no.
right? We're valuing the different opinions, and we want people to be heard and be accepted. And we want to come to, you know, some sort of a consensus, but not a consensus that was coerced.
Yeah, absolutely. Natalie, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find out more about the work that you've done on women in Agile?
Yeah, so great question. There's a website out there. It's womeninagile.com. And there's a lot of resources out there, as well as if you go to my personal website, just nataliewarner.com, there's a ton of other things that I've done, links to other podcasts and my thesis. So all of those things are out there. And then the other thing is, anyone is welcome to use the hashtag Women in Agile on Twitter. And so people will post some great articles on there. And that's a great way for everyone to collaborate. Oh, and one last thing, there is also a LinkedIn group that is completely open, and people post discussions on there too. So,
okay, great. Well, I'll make sure and link all of that up in the show notes. Natalie, thank you so much for being with us today. And I'm excited to see your talk, Show Me the MVP, at Digital PM Summit this October 12th through 15th in San Antonio. And this is the fourth Digital PM Summit, which kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm super excited to be there and to be able to talk.
Well, thanks again. And everybody who was listening, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next week.